edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. We're going to get to Stan Deo in just a second, but want to give a quick shout out to some listeners in chat. We have Rafal in Poland, Tom and Laura in Canada, Alicia in the Netherlands, and Edward B. I want to say a special shout out to you, and thank you guys for checking in with us. We have Stan Deo from StanDeo.com with us. He joins us each and every Tuesday in hour number three. Folks, go to StanDeo.com, and when you're there, bookmark it. After you're done bookmarking it, scroll down, and on the right-hand side, you'll see a microphone, and then you'll see Show Images. You click on the Show Images, and Stan puts excellent graphics of all the things he's been researching and wants to talk about together, so we can not only talk about some of these things, but we can also look at them visually and see what's going on. Stan, very busy week. Welcome back to the show.
Yes, it is a busy week. What a way to start, hey? A couple of really interesting things in the news. Well, grab your attention first.
Well, if we're going to start with the news real quick, we spent the first hour, my dad and I, talking about James Comey and the Trump firing. My dad and me have similar but differing opinions, at least in the fact that that the left is going to, you know, make a case for impeachment with Trump about this, and I just, you know, scratch my head and say, you know, well, what's, how's that different from, you know, the first 120 days or however long into his presidency we are in? But what do you think of this? You know, many people are saying he's abusing his power, which, at least from his job description, he's well within his authority, or he's covering up for the Russia investigation by letting Comey go, which, you know, we haven't seen anything tying Trump and Russia together in the way that they claim. Do you think this was Comey's incompetence or the mistakes he made during the campaign and just even yesterday, where the FBI had to go and change his testimony about Huma Abedin's emails, because he said that there was hundreds of thousands of emails that Huma forwarded to Anthony Weiner, her husband, for him to print out, but Comey came out and said, well, Weiner did not read those emails. I don't know how he knows that. But they had to go change his testimony to say it was only, you know, a few emails. And he's made a number of mistakes, you know, in the last year. But what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, first of all, he shouldn't have injected himself into the political arena during an election year with that. He should have given it to the Attorney General's office. That's, you know, the charter of the FBI. They investigate these things and things that need to potentially have, you know, adjudication, and they go to the Attorney General. And, you know, that step was not taken. He just went straight to the press with it, which was really not called for. It was acting like J. Edgar Hoover did occasionally with the amount of power he managed to amass in the FBI. Now, I did work for the FBI undercover in 1970-71. As I've stated before, there were about 700 of us that were recruited to investigate. Well, I'm not sure whether it was for Director Hoover or against him, but we were investigating things that were not supposed to be happening within the FBI in Washington area. My part of the investigation kind of identified one of the Washington area head of the bureau under Hoover as doing something he shouldn't with the Nixon administration, and I just had to be in the right place at the right time to do that. So I do know that there were two factions inside the FBI at that time, at 70-71, that there were the guys that supported Hoover and his, you know, control of all the information he had on all kinds of stuff, you know, kind of a dictatorial structure. And there were those that opposed that and wanted to, you know, sense if they want to investigate that with an independent judicial or investigative committee, but not with, you know, the FBI, the CIA. Let's have them appoint a fair and balanced type committee if you can find such, and go ahead and look at that. Now, you know, the left and some of the extreme Republicans as well don't want Trump in office, and they're looking for any excuse to bring him down, to try to impeach him and then remove him from office. And if that's what this is all about, I think it's, you know, it's not shouldn't be the done thing. They should stop this. They're wasting a lot of time and resources. But if there is some evidence that Trump has personal reasons to support, you know, the not investigating the Russian connection with some of his appointees after his election, okay, you know, be fair about it, but I really don't think it's there.
No, I agree. When it comes to the Russia investigation, I believe with all my heart that if there was anything there, they would have grabbed it and leaked it to the press. They would have been screaming it, you know, on the rooftops already. They would have done everything in their power to get that information out in order to, you know, continue their efforts to delegitimize Trump and try to paint him as some kind of foreign operative. And they have nothing. And people have testified, including Comey himself, who's made statements that there's nothing there between Trump campaign and the Russian election interference or collusion. You know, first it was Russian hacking, then it was collusion, then it was meddling. They can't even get their story right with that. But Stan, one more question as it pertains to Comey. The when this happened with Nixon, and people are trying to equate these two, when Nixon removed a special prosecutor and this
Archibald Cox,
right? What do you say when they say when the left or whoever is saying that this is a Nixonian, very similar to what Nixon did, and it ties into the investigation, but in the same time it doesn't. And you guys were around for those days, Dad and Stan.
Yeah. And
is this related? Yeah. Is this similar to what Nixon did, in your opinion?
Doug, what do you think?
Well, the context here is important, Stan. Just briefly, the Nixon situation started with a tape. June 23rd, 1972, there was a tape that Archibald Cox wanted released. And Nixon refused to release it. And the progression of events from 1972 to 1974, very interesting. Nixon pressed Archibald Cox, who subpoenaed the tapes, that specific tape from January or June 23rd, 1972, when Nixon declined to release that particular tape. Nixon told his attorney general at the time to fire Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor. The attorney general said no. Nixon fired the attorney general. Then directed the deputy AG to fire Archibald Cox. The deputy attorney general said no, and he was fired. And it wasn't really about the it was about the consequences more than the actual series of events in the Nixon era. Perhaps more contextually applicable would be the firing of William Sessions by Bill Clinton during his presidency. However, in terms of factual context, however, the political ramifications and the consequences of the firing are more Nixonian, or at least this is how it's going to be portrayed by the progressive left. I don't know if I overcomplicated that, but the bottom line, it's about optics, you know. It's about how the progressive left is going to frame, in my view, the firing, and it's going to take on this Nixonian feel, referencing Archibald Cox as a special prosecutor, and as a result of his firing, the consequences led to the August 8th, 1974, the impeachment and then the resignation, August 8th, 1974, of Richard Nixon. However, That's how I believe it's going to be set up. I don't know if that complicated matters, but I think that we have to look at the context in which this is about to play out and the optics behind it, as opposed to the facts, because the optics appear to be dominating the field. Did I just confuse everything?
Not really. I understand what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're saying, because in 1972, well, back in late 1971, I was gone from the States for 30 years. So my access to, you know, any of that sort of information was through the news media, which, you know, it was probably more reliable than it is now, but it wasn't that good then. When I was working with them, with the FBI, one of the things that the director was, Director Hoover, was very, very much involved in was investigating the group called the Illuminati, and they did use that term inside the agency. And part of what I was reporting was involved with feedback on that to them about the Illuminati and about the war within the FBI. Now, I know that Treasurer Hoover did a lot of strange things, and that's a matter of history now, but at the time we didn't know that. But he was trying to isolate, identify, and perhaps neutralize, if he could, the Illuminists in this country that were taking over the United States. So that was because of all the information he had in his files on everybody and everything. He was a data collector from the time he started it in the agency years before that. Now, you look at Comey. He takes over the position after several other guys, you know, were appointed the director of the FBI over the ensuing years between, you know, 73 and 2013. Now, Comey had access still, I guess after today he won't, but he had access to all of the files that Hoover left behind, as far as we know, which meant he would have had information on the Illuminists and their operation. Now, you would think that what he did with the emails to Clinton, about Clinton, before the election, was damning evidence to get rid of Hillary. And yet they're now saying that they think the Democratic side may support Comey's position, but that he was unjustly fired from his position for whatever reason. And so when you have the Democrats supporting Comey, it makes me wonder, did he continue the investigation by Hoover and bury it, you know, or was he helping the left or the Illuminists? Because he was in a position on top of a database that had everything that all of us that are called conspiracy theorists about the world government and the Illuminists, everything that was humanly possible together in this country, Hoover had that file. As they computerized, it became more and more evident how much the amount of the data was on this Illuminist movement. So I see things happening here just as you do in the news, and I'm slow to jump to a conclusion about whether this guy is guilty, whether, you know, that guy is guilty or this woman or whatever, because they are throwing junk at us in the news, you know, just fake news and some real news. And there are so many ways to remove a president. There are so many ways to remove a FBI or, you know, affect changes in the Attorney General's Department. There's so many options that we don't know unless we're, you know, legal eagles and students of the Constitution. I'm sitting back and just watching. I don't know who to trust, quite honestly, at this point in this whole melee of junk.
Okay. And, I mean, that's a fair analysis. I'm with you, Stan. It's so convoluted anymore. And I have no faith in the political system or the people in there, you know, when we're talking about 99.9% of them. And it is just one, you know, big giant dog and pony show, and it is it's been a disgrace, and it's just getting worse and worse. And then the media piggybacking off it, feeding into, you know, the false narrative and the lies, and the public's, you know, invoking their emotions. It's very damaging, and it creates a lot of confusion and chaos. So if we can, let's move to another topic that I know a lot of the listeners have been asking about that we have not touched on yet, and that is that the emergency that was declared at the U.S. Hanford nuclear waste site after a tunnel collapsed The U.S. Department of Energy declared an emergency at Hanford, Washington nuclear waste storage site after a cave-in of a tunnel used to store radioactive materials and equipment. Since this has happened, there has been a no-fly zone over the area implemented. Workers were told, 3,000 workers were told to take cover, as well as, and that was expanded to the entire site, which the site is about half the size of Rhode Island. And a portion of the tunnel near the plutonium uranium extraction plant collapsed, and it's uncertain exactly what's under there, but there should, from reports I've read there, they said they stored about 56 million gallons or 56 million gallons of radioactive fuel that was, have been stored down there, toxic fuel that's been stored down there for quite a while, in fuel rods from the 1960s. Do you think there's a lot more? Do you think there's this is a huge incident? Is it yet to be determined? What are your initial thoughts on this, Stan?
Well, before I get to that, I just want to finish up with one last thing on the Comey thing. What you and I are saying, and Doug as well as many others, is that we're dissatisfied with government and the politics of the government in this country. But this is not just an American problem. The people of France, of England, you know, of all kinds of countries are dissatisfied with the way their governments have been handling and are handling the affairs of their countries. People are losing faith in their leadership. And one of the things that under Hoover, you know, an investigation that I continued about the Illuminists was the document called the Learned Elders, the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, which are not Jewish, but Zionist, you know, conspiracies, whatever. But this is a spurious document, you know, a fake document written by the Russians and adopted by Hitler to give an excuse to get rid of the Jews. Now, whoever wrote this document, whatever religion or country they came from, whoever wrote that document, one of the mandates that they put in there did say that they would make the people of the earth so dissatisfied with their leadership that they would cry out for a new independent king of the planet. That's the global dictator, the Antichrist spoken of in the Bible, I'm sure. And these guys, whoever wrote those protocols for real, and we think it was a Russian general that had it commissioned, had a plan in play before World War II about how to bring this about globally, and we're seeing this now. Like you, Doug and Joe and I were talking, we're saying we're unhappy with the political situation. We don't trust them, and that's just our country, and we're not alone. All the other countries' peoples are doing this too. We are being primed globally to want to get rid of the quote unquote Illuminist leadership of the world and take on a new, you know, trusted king, which will probably be this one backed by the alleged alien brothers in the land. Anyway, that's the last thing I want to say on that Comey issue. And now to the Hanford reactor site. That Hanford site, over the years since 1942, I think they started investigating the area to, you know, the Hanford area. They decided that place would be a great location for the reactor they needed to have the uranium reaction and to get the plutonium they needed for the atomic bombs to bomb Japan. The Trinity bomb, the first one there, the plutonium for that came from the Hanford facility, from reactor B in September of 1944. And the Fat Boy bomb that went over Japan as well, that bomb, the plutonium fuel for that was made there at the Hanford site. Now, as you pointed out when you were discussing this about the amount of radioactive waste and stuff there at the Hanford facility, it is the most contaminated, you know, radiation contaminated nuclear site in the United States today. And they've been for years now then proposing and doing various types of cleanup to try to clean up the site and all the mistakes that were made as far as storing the waste material from the radiation production, you know, from the nuclear radiation products production there. And because they didn't know enough about storing material safely, they're seeing that there are double shell tanks that are breaking apart with corrosion at the bottom and leaking into the ground. And they're only 6.5 miles or so from the Columbia River, so its potential is years. And they've been monitoring these tanks now then every 3 years to try to avoid any major radioactive catastrophe. Now, the collapse of this one little part of the shaft, you can see it on my show images page there, image 43, shows a video or a still from a video a news team did there to show the collapsed area. And you can see from the size of it there, comparing to the whatever that gizmo is down there with tires on, you can see it's not a large hole, but it did collapse over this long buried tunnel, which has rail cars and all kinds of other containers stored in it with all the radioactive waste. Now, because of this situation, there are other factors that they're having the 3,000 employees you talked about go to safety and stay indoors, whatever. There are other factors because in these tunnels, there were also stored a beryllium byproduct, beryllium powder. And if it gets airborne and you sniff it, you're in deep trouble because it produces a lung disease called chronic beryllium, disease, CBD. I have it too. I have it in my right lung, and the lower part of it scars your lungs. And there's no cure for it. You just have to deal with it over periods of time. So that's why they're telling people, stay indoors, as much for the potential radioactive dust that may come out, also the beryllium powder. In fact, they have a whole cleanup program at the Hanford Emergency side there. It's called the Beryllium Program, and that's one of the major things that they watch there. It can be airborne. It's a light kind of white dust that spreads out very quickly, and then you can breathe it or touch it. Even if you touch beryllium, various compounds of it, it'll go through your skin, and you develop the beryllium disease in the lungs. I don't know why it does that, but it does. Anyway, that's part of it, why they're doing that. Now, it's odd. If you go to the Hanford site, they have a public meeting. They're holding on the 17th, another 8 days. It's strange that happens, that this collapse occurs now, and they're having a Hanford site cleanup priorities meeting with the public on May the 17th. I that's kind of coincidental, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean,
that was scheduled before.
Well, this event?
Well, yeah, it was, as far as I know.
There's been ongoing issues.
If you go to their Hanford site, and, it says, right up on the thing there, the cleanup priorities. They've been doing this. I mean, it's not a new thing. They've been having public meetings on the cleanup for several years now then because of the urgency, that has developed with the leakages and various things like that. Let me just see here if I can get over to this.
Yeah, Stan, I was looking today, and John brought this to my attention today, and one of the first things I found was from May 14th or 15th of last year that dealt with some kind of incident they had where, I don't know if it was something that happened or if it was just a steady leak, but the radioactive levels had increased there for some reason, and they tried to say it was natural radiation, but there was no way that it could have been natural radiation. But they have been having safety and contamination issues for a number of years now. So I'm not sure if that's just good timing, or if they'll even, move that date up, because they're telling people to shelter in place, don't come outside, evacuating the employees, and it's a big site. And, 56 million gallons of radioactive fuel stored underneath in 177 different containers. And that's just what was stored underneath there. Who knows what else is happening? I guess my question is, we can't know what kind of damage or the potential damage that this could do to the public. But do you trust do you believe the government would issue warnings or tell the truth of the extent of the damage if it was really bad?
Probably not, directly or openly in a press announcement or something like that. They might announce to various operations they perform under FEMA or something like that. We're going to address this issue here, and at the same time, they'd be cleaning up a lot of the other stuff or trying to that might be a threat. I've often wondered if I were in charge of a government and something like this happened, how much would I reveal immediately and openly to the public, you know, to avoid panic, property value collapses, food industry impacts if it's got a water source and food supplies connected to it. You know, people are people, and they will react like a herd sometimes and do more damage than the actual thing that you'd be telling them. So would I, I'm 50-50 on whether I would make it, obviously, an open statement at that moment in the interest of trying to clean up the problem rather than create one even bigger.
Okay. Folks, we're talking with... Yeah, absolutely. Stan, we're up against the break. Folks, we are up against the break. We're talking with Stan Deo. StanDeo.com is the website. Make sure you bookmark it and check out the show images page, which we use each and every time Stan comes on.
A lot of wisdom there, folks.
And the site is fantastic for content, both, you know, national, international, the photo of the day, and all kinds of other great stuff. They've put together a tremendous user-friendly website that... And it's a great place to start your day. So, again, StanDeo.com is the website. And Stan will be back with us for the end of the show for the next segment. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is... It'll blow you away. Absolutely. Eric said...
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Trained Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.trainpersonwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report, a heavy news day, just a tremendously heavy news day. In my view, to mark today on your calendar, it is May 9th, 2017. the ripples from the events of today will be felt henceforth. And I don't want to overstate, but I certainly do not want to understate the importance of what is taking place today. And it's all about the optics. It's about the narrative, two words I really don't care much for, but you know, it's that over the facts. And Stan Deo bringing plenty of wisdom to the situation today in his analysis. And of course, you know, a lot of respect for Stan and his wisdom about geopolitical and political events. Before we get back to Stan, T.C. Joseph, This Generation series of novels. Folks, I cannot recommend highly, any higher than I already am right now. T.C. Joseph is just a fantastic writer. He has written a trilogy of books. Precipice is book one, Pentecost book two, and book three is Penance in this trilogy. And if you want a glimpse of current events through a somewhat fictionalized, well, a fictionalized type of an account, this is it. We have used his three books as tools to awaken others who would be turned off by direct information. These are three great books, Precipice, Pentecost, and Penance, all getting great reviews from Kirkus and Blue Ink. Very, very tough reviewing sites. Find, folks, find his books on Amazon or go to This Generation series. T.C. Joseph, an amazing author. Joe?
Absolutely. And I believe he's coming up sometime in the near future to be on the show. I just got the thumbs up, so that is a go. And that's going to be a very interesting interview. Looking forward to that. Folks, each and every Tuesday, Stan Deo is our guest in the third hour, and his website is standeo.com. Check out the show images page again, and there you can find the different things that Stan has been researching and working on to bring onto the show and talk about. Stan, we covered James Comey. We covered the Hanford nuclear facility and the potential emergency situation that's going on there with a tunnel collapsing and toxic nuclear fuel possibly contaminating the area. That is yet to be seen. What else do you want to get in tonight? I see a number of things up on the show images page, a whole bunch of stuff that you got up there. So where do you want to go?
Probably, changes in the sun and earthquakes. One thing I did add, which you won't see immediately, but look down at image 26. It's just a snap of Google Earth in the Middle East with the countries outlined, because so many times people, if they don't look at this every day and map the stuff, they'll say, oh, it's something happening in Afghanistan or Iran or Iraq or Saudi Arabia, Turkey. And because a lot of the news that we're covering from week to week does mention, you know, the Kurds or the Turkish and, you know, Syria. So if you click on that, when you've got a question about where one of those countries is, that pretty much shows the Middle East as you need to see it, and you could refer to that. Now, getting back at the moment to the problems with the sun, image 39, or 38, 35, and 32, these are all to deal with the sun and with the cause of global quote unquote warming. Image 35, you can read an article there about the global temperature could exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius average. Now, that's a Washington Post article, and the reason that's important is 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius up or down on average for the whole planet can throw us into an ice age or the reverse of it. Now, historically, like the Great Ice Age, it was at least a 2 degrees centigrade drop across the planet, and that's what did that. But here, they're saying we're going the opposite direction in that image, you know, 35 in the Washington Post article from, you know, NASA data and stuff like that. But if you look over in image 32, they're saying that this guy here, it's from, you know, the Netherlands or Denmark or something. Anyway, I'll just find his name. Anyway, this scientist is saying that we're looking for a little ice age to begin in the next 3 years. I mean, he even put the timing on it. Now, that's going the opposite direction of what you would expect for, you know, warming for the whole planet. I do understand how that could happen in isolated areas where there would be a new mini ice age because the heating of the planet goes to another place, but I don't see the evidence of that in the article or in the video, but you can have a look at it and see what the guy says. Okay, and above that, on the show images page, we have image 38 we're looking for here, if I can get to it. Oh, come on, give me my show here. Computers. Okay. Image 38, okay, it tells you the consequences, and this is a NASA article, which is probably, believe it or not, more reliable than the rest of the stuff that we're seeing. And that'll give you a discussion of the pros and cons of temperature changes up and down for making climate change. Something is happening. We are seeing warming of the Arctic, warming of the Antarctic, melting of ice flows and glaciers and stuff. And we're seeing changes in, you know, the weather, catastrophic floods and storms and tornado numbers and stuff like that. And we're supposed to be, as Image 39 shows, in a time of reduced sunspot activity on the sun. This is kind of not the best way to tell about what's happening on the sun. The best way is to measure certain frequency ranges that are being emitted in the ultraviolet and visible and non-visible light wave frequency bands. But also, you look at the irradiance, the amount of energy being put out by the sun. And they're talking about this in spaceweather.com. They were talking about measuring stealth solar storms. They don't have a CME. They don't have a big explosion. All of a sudden, you have this stealth, undetected magnetic storm heading your way. We have one of those on the way here now. It won't be a horribly damaging thing, but it kind of sneaked up on us. So you click on 3738, and you can read about the production of these stealth solar storms. They're primarily magnetic storms, the way we would see them. But you can see that there are things happening on the sun that are not normal. The amount of flares and the coronal mass ejections we're getting for this time in the cycle of the sunspot cycle, to me, it says that we're seeing changes in the sun that are atypical. They're unusual. And these affect how you eat and how countries fight each other over food resources and stuff like that, and over availability of fresh water and the amount of damage from catastrophic storms that result from increased output in the irradiance and various other factors of the sun. And I think we're seeing an increase in the ultraviolet spectra of the sun, which is why people are squinting and their eyes are watering out in the sunshine because of the increased ultraviolet that's getting through. And that's also due to the weakening of the Earth's magnetic field, which is a proven fact. And that field creates the shields in the atmosphere that we need to block out the ultraviolet that, can sterilize the whole planet. So that's on my watch list. I look at 31 now then, image 31 and image 41, which are on earthquakes. 41 just shows you the snap of the last 7 days of earthquakes on the planet, according to USGS plot. And these are earthquakes that are, 2.5 magnitude and above. Up to, just a little over Richter 6. We see some up in the Aleutians, or one up in the Aleutians, one over in Japan, the southern islands there near Okinawa. And you can see the index down at the bottom. It says, color-wise, what hour, age it is, what day, what week, and then the circle size of the magnitude. Now, what I'm seeing from this is that we're seeing a lot of activity up in the Aleutians. We're starting to see more Richter 2.5s in the last week. One in the, it's above a Richter 2.5, I can't remember the exact value, but it's in the southern part of the Juan de Fuca plate, which is dangerous. And on the California coast, we're seeing underneath that a number of smaller earthquakes, but clusters of them. And before that, even last month, we had a bunch of earthquakes down on the west coast of South America, Chile, Peru, and that area. And even a couple up to Ecuador and in Central America, possibly indicating we're going to see make up our series of them up marching them, is it going to hit, you know, in the area of the Hanford reactor, you know, and complicate the problems?
Yeah.
Maybe we could have our own version of a Fukushima there.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting point, Stan. And, you know, back, just real quick, back to the sun, because I think this is really, really neat, because you've been on, coming on our show for a long time now. And when the sun was in the solar maximum cycle, you know, you were talking about a lot of these things also, about how the sun affects the climate. And, you know, we're not only seeing the Earth's climate being changed, we're also seeing, you know, the temperatures on other places in the solar system that are changing. And now when we're at a solar minimum, it's interesting to go back, you know, to those shows that you did before, talking about the solar maximum and the changes in the sun. And then from what you described also, is that the sun can affect earthquakes or have an impact on the tectonic plates, which it's definitely something that we need to watch, especially on that West Coast, in relation to the Hanford nuclear site. And, you know, so much going on right now. I wanted to ask you, while we're talking about the sun, I don't know if this is something that you monitor on a regular basis, the Earth's magnetic field. One, if you have been monitoring it, have you been noticing any strange anomalies? And two, what's the sun's connection to the Earth's magnetic field, if any?
Well, the sun is absolutely connected, like a, you know, a strong tie to our magnetic field, because the sun emits protons and other particles of elements in what's called, you know, the solar wind. And it's kind of like a, if you know what a Catherine wheel is, it's arms on a, you know, spinning around a, you know, a circular point, and they're like sprayed arms, like a galaxy looks, you know, like a spiral galaxy. And the density of the solar wind varies from in between those solar arms of the solar wind and to the void spaces in between, which really aren't void, they're just less solar wind. So in essence, we get solar wind constantly, but because there are these charged positive proton particles in there, we're seeing that they impact our outer atmosphere into the ionosphere, and they travel down into the core of the planet and back out, in forming this, you know, ionized layer of the, you know, the atmosphere, the ionosphere. But in the process of doing that, these charged magnetic particles, in essence, physically hit the Earth's magnetopause, which is the field around us, the magnetic field, and they compress it. And if the polarity is, you know, not what it normally is, or not as strong as it should be, it's not reinforcing our magnetic field. It's helping to decay the Earth's magnetic field. But I know that when planets form, as do stars and things, that they age and their characteristics change. And in planets, they have a molten core, and they have movement of that core with a conductor in it. And most things will conduct if you get them to a high enough temperature. But anyway, these circulating molten elements inside the Earth, in this case, are generating a dynamic generator, a dynamo inside the Earth that creates a positive, you know, DC flow of current, and this makes the Earth a big magnet. Now, and that generates the field which holds in, you know, the particles of the atmosphere that we need to you know, in the ozone layer to shield us from the ultraviolet and other like gamma radiation stuff from deep space explosions of other stars. So the magnetic connection between the sun and the Earth is important, and it's important as long as it sustains our magnetic field, and it's important as long as it shields us from external radiations and its own radiations that are harmful to life. So it's very important to watch this, and that's why a lot of us are watching the ozone layer, you know, and the holes in the ozone layer around the planet. I've been in those in the years past in Australia, and they weren't as prevalent then as they are now. Mainly you would see them over the South Atlantic in the South Atlantic anomaly, the magnetic anomaly there. We don't even like to, the United States and Russia don't even like to send astronauts through that area of the upper atmosphere there, because it's so unshielded that you need extra shielding to protect your crew from the radiation from the core will cool, be cool enough to become solid. When that happens, our magnetic field will probably be totally gone to any usable, you know, strength. And the reports, you know, that they've been able to deduce from ancient records in the in Europe and in England do show that the magnetic field is on an exponential decay curve. It's getting weaker, weaker, weaker. And from that, they have been able to backtrack to when the Earth was all molten and say, okay, when it was all molten, the whole thing was a magnet, you know, the dynamic spinning, you know, molten rock and lava and stuff. Okay, it was a big magnet. And they, when a magnetic field is formed in an electric circuit, there's something called a hysteresis point where the heat won't allow magnetic field to be unified. It'll be random. It'll be chaotic. But it cools beneath a certain temperature. At this hysteresis point, you can tell that the Earth started 40 to 50,000 years ago at maximum as a molten ball. And at some point thereafter, the surface cooled. And then we had the mantle cooling a little bit where it became semi-plastic. And so we had a magnet that was not destroyed by the hysteresis effect, and that enabled us to tell scientifically reasonably good that the Earth was 40 to 50,000 years ago when it was formed by that kind of analysis. I'm not saying it wasn't a biblical thing of, you know, 6 to 12,000 years, but anyway, it's getting closer to a young Earth when we look at the magnetic field. And I digress, but anyway, that was the connection between the sun, magnetic field, and ours.
Well, thanks for that explanation. And I know there used to be a great site to monitor the Earth's magnetosphere and the fluctuations and changes that it went through. And that was taken down some years ago. And now there's a few sites that do have it up there, but they don't have, it doesn't go into the same detail as it used to. That's just something that's, I knew it was connected. I just don't know how that all works. And I appreciate you explaining that for us. Moving forward here, and I'm looking around on your show images page. I see a story I want to get into, but we'll save that, the good one, for last on the Christian couple. I want to save that one for last. If we can go to number 34, right. Chinese supercomputers threaten U.S. security. We've seen a number of interesting AI and other you know, technologically related articles that talk about, you know, robots going to be taking over jobs. You know, we've seen a lot about AI and you know, transhumanism things in the last few weeks. But this is an article telling us how the Chinese is eclipsing the United States in high-speed supercomputers. And not only that, they're using this technology to build advanced weapons. Are we looking at, Stan, you know, instead of, are we looking at a battle of the robots here in the future? I mean, are we just going to see this huge influx of these AI smart computers, you know, just taking over our society? I mean, is it really almost at the door?
Oh, I think so. It's been that way for a while, but certainly with the perfection of the quantum computers, they are so fast, and they can handle such vast databases in real time that whoever has them will use them to do, like the movie The Colossus, the Forbin Project. I don't know, did you ever see that years ago?
No.
Where the computer they built took over the world?
No, I have not seen that.
Well, look up Colossus, the Forbin Project. And that was made back in the days when, you know, an IBM 360 computer was the bee's knees, which is so much smaller than the computer you have in your smartphone now. It's not funny, but anyway, they were looking ahead, the scriptwriters, and they looked at the situation we're seeing now, where you have superpowers, you know, China, Russia, United States, possibly Great Britain to a degree, but anyway, you have them using their computer systems to outthink and outact the other guy. And this article here in the Times on this new computer called Taihu Light in China is it's telling that they can use this to real-time navigate around interceptor missiles coming after their missiles if they attack a country, probably the United States, obviously. And so whether our supercomputers are better than theirs, I don't know. it's something I've studied for a number of years, figuring out how our brains work and how they could make, computers based upon that. And they call them neural networks, heuristic neural networks.
Yeah, from the brain mapping.
It's like Star Trek or, you hear that kind of term bandied around in that years ago. And that's where they got it from. The RAND Corporation in California did some research on that and a number of others. And if you think about it, when a person dies, all their memories, all their personnel and all that kind of stuff leaves the body. Now, I talked to one lady here recently from the Philippines who watched her sister die. She was with her when she died. And as she expired, her mouth opened, and a white, bally-shaped cloud of energy came out of it and then dissipated, immediately gone. And I remember an experiment where I saw this, or I heard this happen over in Thailand. Dr. Rajanasan was a guest in our home, and he talked about his father watching a man die. His father was a medical doctor, and he and his partner paid a family, and the old man who was about to expire paid him his family amount of money to put him in a glass cage on a scale to weigh it, very sensitive, and to watch him at the moment of death to see if his body changed weight. And to their surprise, when he breathed his last, the needle didn't change like the weight of anything, but they were watching it, and a ball of light popped out of his chest, white light, bounced around inside the glass cage, and then the glass cage exploded from the inside, and the ball of light was gone, and the man was dead. They closed up the whole experiment, never talked about it again, put it away, that was it. So what I'm getting back to is the ball of light. In the neural nets that we're talking about, they start a sine wave frequency going through the network, just circulating around and around and around, and being rejuvenated by a power supply, in our case, the body, generating 100 watts or whatever, is using some of that energy to keep the loop running in our brain through all the neurons and stuff circulating on top of each other. As you've got stimulus, light, sound, whatever, you would impose a frequency on top of that host frequency. And over the period of time, you would have a layer and layer and layer built up in these neural networks of events, which are frequencies that are imposed over this circulating neural frequency. And I'm thinking that's what they're trying to do with these supercomputers, because they've even been growing nerve axons, brain cells, on silicon chips to make a hybrid, digital chip with a living organic nerve chip. And if they've been able to incorporate that into their quantum computer structures, they have created a beast, a real beast, a semi-living thing that's built upon the mechanism that is us, our soul, our spirit. Interesting thought, anyway.
Yes, it is, absolutely. Stan, we just got a few minutes left. I wanted to make sure we touched on this, because I find this to be a beacon of hope, if you will, for those. Yeah, absolutely encouraging.
I love this.
Christian couple who lost their gay marriage cake case sees profits soar to millions despite controversy. This is the Asher's Bakery in Northern Ireland, and they have several locations in the UK. But they refused to make a pro-gay marriage wedding cake. They were sued for it. They lost their discrimination lawsuit, but their business seems to be thriving. What are your thoughts, Dan?
Oh, I think that's great. I mean, here they stand up for the biblical principle. They're not going to, serve something that is obviously against what the Bible teaches about, gay marriage and even being gay for that matter. And they said they wouldn't make the wedding cake for them because they didn't believe in that. They didn't want to support that in any way. So, of course, they got sued and they had to lose the suit and everything. But because of that, their business prospered. I mean, about $2 million they profited last year from it. So, I'm saying this is encouraging. The Lord is still supporting those who support him. And sometimes you don't know until the thing is, the dust settles, that you've won and not been wiped out. But this couple did this. Just, a young couple, you can see the picture there in the article. And I just, I'm encouraged by it. I just think that this is really good.
And I love that. And this will certainly stand to anger the weavers of lies among the Christian community. Let me tell you, it's just, you know, it's amazing, Stan. I find this story very encouraging, and I find it. Thank you. Thank you for really posting that, because it's...
Yeah, that really just reached me today as I was reading through news and things. I thought, wow, I remember that couple coming out in the news where they were just clobbered because, you know, they wouldn't make that cake like that. And I thought, wow, you know, that's just so good. Stand your ground. So it's encouraging to all of us to stand our ground
for
the Lord.
Never give up. That's right. Never give up. Never settle. Never give up. Always fight. Take it to the end.
And even in the face of controversy and even losing, or the appearance of losing, like they lost their discrimination suit, doesn't mean you have to give up, and it's never over as long as your faith holds strong. The Lord will bless you. And that's the lesson there. Stan, thank you so much for joining us again tonight. It was a fantastic interview. Covered a lot of ground, and
look
forward to having you on next week.
Okay, guys. Lord bless. See you next week.
God bless, sir.
God bless you too, Stan. Have a good night. Well, that will do it for us tonight. We covered a lot of ground again this evening. We had Joel Richardson on in hour number two. Again, folks, joelstrumpet.com is the website. His book, Mystery Babylon, you can get 20% off for Hagman listeners. But if you go to joelstrumpet.com and sign up for the newsletter, you receive another 10% off. And what's that?
Subscribe to our YouTube channel.
There you go. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. That will do it for us tonight. Until tomorrow, stay safe. God bless. Have a great evening.